Florida's Government in the Sunshine Law provides a right of access to governmental proceedings at both the state and local levels. In the absence of statutory exemption, it applies to any gathering of two or more members of the same board to discuss some matter which will foreseeably come before that board for action. A constitutional right of access to meetings of collegial public bodies is also recognized in Article 1, Section 24 of the Florida Constitution. Virtually all collegial bodies are covered by the open meetings mandate of this constitutional provision, with the exception of the judiciary and the state legislature, which has its own constitutional provision regarding access. The only exceptions are those provided by law or the Constitution. As discussed earlier, the Sunshine Law applies to any gathering, whether formal or casual, of two or more members of the same board or commission to discuss some matter on which foreseeable action will be taken by the public board or commission. As the Florida Supreme Court said, collective inquiry and discussion stages are embraced within the terms of the statute. With these principles in mind, the Attorney General's office has stated that the following gatherings are subject to the Sunshine Law: executive work sessions held by a board of commissioners of a housing authority to discuss policy matters, organizational sessions or meetings to elect officers of a school board, workshop meetings of a planning and zoning commission, conference sessions held by a town council before its regular meetings, discussions of a pre-audit report of the Auditor General by the governing body of a special district. Members elect of boards or commissions are subject to the Sunshine Law. However, the Sunshine Law does not apply to candidates for office unless the candidate is an incumbent seeking re-election. The Sunshine Law does not apply to a meeting between individuals who are members of different boards unless one or more of the individuals has been delegated the authority to act on behalf of his or her board. Thus, a meeting between the chair of a private industry council created pursuant to federal law and the chair of a 5-county employment and training consortium created pursuant to state law is not subject to the Sunshine Law unless there is a delegation of decision-making authority to the chair of the consortium. An individual city council member may, therefore, meet privately with an individual member of the Municipal Planning and Zoning Board to discuss a recommendation made by that board, since two or more members of either board are not present, provided that no delegation of decision-making authority has been made and neither member is acting as a liaison. If the mayor is a member of the council or has a voice in decision-making through the power to break tie votes, meetings between the mayor and a member of the city council to discuss some matter which will come before the city council are subject to the Sunshine Law. The Attorney General's office has advised that county commissioners who are also members of a regional planning council may take part in council meetings and express their opinions without violating the Sunshine Law. However, these officials should not discuss or debate these issues with one another outside the Sunshine, either as county commissioners or as regional planning council members. Similarly, the Sunshine Law does not prohibit city commissioners from attending other public city board meetings and commenting on agenda items that may subsequently come before the commission for final action. However, city commissioners attending such meetings may not discuss those issues among themselves. Members of a public board or commission are not prohibited under the Sunshine Law from meeting together socially, provided that matters which may come before the board or commission are not discussed at such gatherings. Thus, when two or more members of a public board are attending or participating in meetings or other functions unconnected with their board, they must refrain from discussing matters on which foreseeable action may be taken by the board, but are not otherwise restricted in their actions. For example, a luncheon meeting held by a private organization for members of a public board or commission at which there is no discussion among such individuals on matters relating to public business would not be subject to the Sunshine Law merely because of the presence of two or more members of a covered board or commission. However, an Attorney General's opinion has cautioned that public boards should avoid secret meetings from which the public and press are effectively excluded, preceding official meetings, even though such meetings are held ostensibly for purely social purposes only, and with the understanding that members of the public body will in good faith attempt to avoid any discussion of official business. Additionally, there is no per se violation of the Sunshine Law for a husband and wife to serve on the same public board or commission, so long as they do not discuss board business without complying with the requirements of the Sunshine Law. Therefore, board members may not engage in private discussions with each other about board business, either in person or by telephoning, emailing, texting, or any other type of communication such as Facebook or blogs. Private telephone conversations between board members to discuss matters which foreseeably will come before that board for action violate the Sunshine Law. Similarly, boards may not take action or discuss board business via written correspondence, emails, or other electronic communications such as Facebook postings or text messages. For example, the Sunshine Law prohibits city commissioners from using an electronic newsletter to discuss matters that foreseeably may come before the city commission. Likewise, a board may not take action on a matter by circulating a memorandum for each board member to sign, whether the board member approves or disapproves of a particular issue. In some cases, Florida statutes authorize certain boards to use a telephone conference call or the internet to conduct public meetings or workshops. However, because each situation is different, it is recommended that boards consult with legal counsel prior to using these technologies to conduct a public meeting. While an individual board member is not prohibited from discussing board business with staff or a non-board member, these individuals may not be used as a liaison to communicate information between board members. For example, a board member cannot ask staff to poll the other board members to determine their views on a board issue. Therefore, as a general rule, individual board members may call upon staff members for factual information and advice without being subject to the Sunshine Law's requirements. However, the Sunshine Law is applicable to meetings between a board member and an individual who is not a member of that board when that individual is being used as a liaison between or to conduct a de facto meeting of board members. For example, in a 1979 case, the court held that a series of scheduled successive meetings between the school superintendent and individual members of the school board were subject to the Sunshine Law. While normally meetings between the school superintendent and an individual board member would not be subject to the Sunshine Law, these meetings were held in rapid-fire succession in order to avoid a public airing of a controversial redistricting problem. They amounted to a de facto meeting of the school board in violation of the Sunshine Law. Similarly, a circuit court judge found that a series of private meetings between a school superintendent and individual school board members, which were scheduled by the superintendent to present and consider staff recommendations concerning the administrative structure of the school system and to privately address any objections or concerns the board might have, should have been held in the sunshine. The court said that its decision should not be construed to prohibit individual board members from meeting privately with staff or the superintendent for informational purposes or on an ad hoc basis. However, it shall be construed to prohibit the scheduling of a series of such meetings which concern a specific agenda. Thus, the court enjoined the board and its superintendent from holding any further closed-door meetings to formulate board policy, discuss matters where board action is contemplated, or otherwise conduct the public's business. In another case, the court invalidated a contract for the sale of municipal property when it was determined that after the proposal to sell the property, which had been discussed and approved at a public meeting, collapsed, the city manager met individually with council members, and from those discussions, the property was sold to another group. The circuit court found that these meetings resulted in a substantial change in the terms of the sale, and that the execution of the contract, therefore, violated the Sunshine Law. Thus, a city manager should refrain from asking each commissioner to state his or her position on a specific matter, which will foreseeably be considered by the commission at a public meeting, in order to provide the information to the members of the commission. However, the fact that a city council member has expressed his or her views or voting intent on an upcoming matter to a news reporter prior to the scheduled board meeting does not violate the Sunshine Law so long as the reporter is not being used by the member as an intermediary in order to avoid the requirements of the Sunshine Law. Another court has stated that the Sunshine Law does not provide for any government by delegation exception. A public body cannot escape the application of the Sunshine Law by undertaking to delegate the conduct of public business through an alter ego. Thus, the Attorney General's office has concluded that a single member of a board who has been delegated the authority to act on behalf of the board in negotiating a lease is subject to the Sunshine Law and therefore cannot negotiate for such a lease in secret. For example, when an individual member of a public board or a board member and the executive director of the board conducts a hearing or investigatory proceeding on behalf of the entire board, an attorney general's opinion has held that the hearing or proceeding should be held in the sunshine. The Sunshine Law would also apply to a special magistrate appointed by a value adjustment board and delegated the decision-making authority of the board when carrying out those responsibilities. On the other hand, if a board or designee has been authorized only to gather information or function as a fact finder, the Sunshine Law does not apply. For example, if a member of a public board is authorized only to explore various contract proposals with the applicant selected for the position of executive director, with such proposals being related back to the governing body for consideration, the discussions between the board member and the applicant are not subject to the Sunshine Law. If, however, the board member has been delegated the authority to reject certain options from further consideration by the entire board, the board member is performing a decision-making function that must be conducted in sunshine. For example, in one opinion, the Attorney General's office stated that it is not a violation of the Sunshine Law for a city council member to meet with a private garbage contractor if the purpose of the meeting is essentially information gathering. But if the board member has been authorized formally or informally to exercise any decision-making authority on behalf of the board, such as approving or rejecting certain contract provisions, the board and the meetings are subject to the Sunshine Law. There are three basic requirements to the Sunshine Law. First, meetings of public boards or commissions must be open to the public. And again, a meeting is any gathering of two or more members of a public board to discuss any matter on which foreseeable action may be taken. The second requirement is that reasonable notice of such meetings must be provided. And third, minutes of the meetings must be prepared and open to public inspection. Reasonable public notice is required for all meetings subject to the Sunshine Law. Therefore, notice is required for meetings of between members of a public board, even though a quorum is not present or the subject of the meeting is, quote, relatively unimportant, unquote. Reasonable public notice is required even though meetings of the board are of general knowledge and are not conducted in a closed-door manner. As one court has emphasized, quote, governmental bodies who hold unnoticed meetings do so at their peril, unquote. The Sunshine Law does not define what constitutes reasonable notice. The notice that must be given is variable and depends on the facts of the situation, i.e., whether or not there is an emergency and the board involved. The goal is to ensure that notice is provided at such time and in such a manner as will enable the media and the general public to attend the meeting. While the Attorney General's office cannot specify the type of notice which must be given in all cases, the following notice guidelines are suggested. The notice should contain the time and place of the meeting and, if available, an agenda, or, if no agenda is available, a statement of the general subject matter to be considered. The notice should be prominently displayed in the area in the agency's offices set aside for that purpose. For example, for cities, in City Hall, and on the agency's website. Except in the case of emergency or special meetings, notice should be provided at least 7 days prior to the meeting. Emergency sessions should be afforded the most appropriate and effective notice under the circumstances. Special meetings should have no less than 24 and preferably at least 72 hours reasonable notice to the public. Press releases, faxes, emails, and or phone calls to the local news media are highly effective in providing additional notice of upcoming meetings. If a meeting is to be adjourned and reconvened later to complete the business from the agenda of the adjourned meeting, the second meeting should be also noticed to the public. While the Sunshine Law requires only reasonable notice, a board may be subject to additional notice requirements imposed by other statutes or local codes. In such cases, the board must satisfy the requirements of that statute, code, or ordinance. For example, a board or commission subject to Chapter 120 Florida Statutes, the Administrative Procedure Act, must comply with the notice requirements of that act. Similarly, While the Sunshine Law does not require that an agency use a paid advertisement in the local media to comply with the notice requirement, the legislature has mandated this for certain actions. For example, Section 166.041 Florida statutes states that a proposed city ordinance must at least 10 days prior to adoption be noticed once in a newspaper of general circulation in the municipality. Among other things, the statute requires that the notice of proposed enactment state the date, time, and place of the meeting and the title of the proposed ordinance. Regarding minutes, the Sunshine Law does not require that public boards or commissions tape record or transcribe their meetings, although in some cases other statutes may impose this requirement for certain proceedings. The tape recording is a public record. However, while a board is authorized to tape record the proceedings, if it chooses to do so, the Sunshine Law also requires written minutes. Similarly, a verbatim transcript is not required. Instead, the term minutes, as used in the Sunshine Law, contemplates a brief summary or series of brief notes reflecting the events of the meeting. However, the board may use a written transcript as the minutes if it chooses to do so. Advisory boards created pursuant to law or ordinance or otherwise established by public agencies may be subject to the Sunshine Law, even though their recommendations are not binding upon the agencies that create them. The following are some of the advisory bodies which have been found to be subject to the Sunshine Law: a citizen planning committee appointed by a city council to assist in revision of zoning ordinances, a site plan review committee created by county ordinance to serve in an advisory capacity to the county manager, a citizen advisory committee appointed by a city council to make recommendations to the council regarding city government, a school advisory council created pursuant to state law, and a land selection committee appointed by a water management district to evaluate and recommend projects for acquisition. The Sunshine Law can apply to advisory committees that are appointed by a single public official, as well as those appointed by a collegial board. For example, the Sunshine Law has been found to apply to an ad hoc advisory committee appointed by a university president to screen applications and make recommendations for the position of dean of the law school, an ad hoc committee appointed by a mayor to meet with the Chamber of Commerce to draft a proposal for transfer of city property, and an advisory board appointed and used by a city manager to screen applications and make recommendations for the position of chief of police. It's also important to note that there is no lesser standard for advisory committees. the court's recognizing that it's the entire decision-making process that concerns the public. For example, one court said, quote, "The Sunshine Law equally binds all members of governmental bodies, be they advisory committee members or elected officials," unquote. Staff meetings are not normally subject to the Sunshine Law. However, staff committees may be subject to the Sunshine Law if they are deemed to be part of the decision-making process as opposed to traditional staff functions like fact-finding or information gathering. Thus, the Sunshine Law ordinarily applies to meetings of elected or appointed boards and does not ordinarily apply to staff committees or meetings. However, if a staff committee has been delegated decision-making authority as opposed to mere fact-finding or information gathering, the Sunshine Law applies. As one court observed, it would be, quote, ludicrous, unquote, to hold that, quote, "a certain committee is governed by the Sunshine Law when it consists of members of the public who are presumably acting for the public, but hold that a committee may escape the Sunshine Law if it consists of individuals who owe their allegiance to and receive their salaries from the governing authority," unquote. Therefore, the Sunshine Law has been applied to a committee composed primarily of staff that was created by a college purchasing director to assist and advise her in evaluating contract proposals. The committee's job was to weed through the various proposals to determine which were acceptable and to rank them accordingly. Also, a committee composed of officials from state, local, and federal agencies, which was created by the State Department of Transportation to screen and evaluate potential corridors and alignments for a possible expansion of the Suncoast Parkway, a City Development Review Committee composed of several city officials and representatives of various city departments, which was established to review and approve development applications. All have been found to be subject to the Sunshine Law. On the other hand, a committee composed of staff, which was merely responsible for informing the decision maker through fact-finding consultations, would not be subject to the Sunshine Law. For example, a court determined that the Sunshine Law did not apply to a police department's discharge of firearms committee because the committee was nothing more than a meeting of staff members who serve in a fact-finding advisory capacity to the chief. Similarly, in another case, the court ruled that the Sunshine Law did not apply to informal meetings of the staff where the discussions were merely informational and where none of the individuals attending the meeting had any decision-making authority during the meetings and where no formal action was taken or could have been taken at the meeting. Only the legislature may create an exemption from the Sunshine Law by a two-thirds vote. An exemption from the public records law does not allow a board to close a meeting. Instead, a specific exemption from the Sunshine Law is required. Therefore, opinions have held that the Sunshine Law is applicable to investigative inquiries of public boards or commissions. The fact that a meeting concerns alleged violations of laws or regulations does not in and of itself remove it from the scope of the law. Instead, a specific statutory exemption would be required. Similarly, the Florida Supreme Court has stated that in the absence of a statute exempting a meeting at which confidential material is discussed, the Sunshine Law should be construed as containing no exceptions. In the absence of legislative exemption, discussions between a public board and its attorney are subject to the Sunshine Law. There is an exemption which allows a board's attorney to meet in closed session with the board to discuss legal strategy relating to settlement negotiations or litigation expenditures in pending litigation. However, because of the very narrow scope of this exemption, as well as the mandatory conditions which must be met before the exemption can be used, it is recommended that no private session be considered unless the board's counsel has given his or her approval. Meetings of a public board or commission at which personnel matters are discussed are not exempt from the provisions of the Sunshine Law in the absence of a specific statutory exemption. Section 447.605, parentheses 1, Florida Statutes, establishes a limited exemption from the Sunshine Law for discussions between the chief executive officer of the public employer or his or her representative and the legislative body of the public employer relative to collective bargaining. The exemption afforded by Section 447.605, parentheses 1, Florida Statutes, applies only in the context of actual and impending collective bargaining negotiations. Therefore, a public body may not conduct an entire meeting outside of the Sunshine Law merely by discussing one topic during the course of that meeting, which may be statutorily exempt. The collective bargaining negotiations between the chief executive officer and a bargaining agent are not exempt and must be conducted in the sunshine. The legislature has, therefore, divided Sunshine Law policy on collective bargaining for public employees into two parts. When the public employer is meeting with its own side, it is exempt from the Sunshine Law. When the public employer is meeting with the other side, it is required to comply with the Sunshine Law. As far as interviews and evaluations are concerned, an attorney general's opinion has noted that the broad scope of the Sunshine Law extends to meetings of a board of county commissioners when interviewing applicants for county positions appointed by the board and when conducting job evaluations of county employees. Similarly, if a board creates an advisory committee with the authority to screen applications and make recommendations for a position, the Sunshine Law applies. For example, a committee created to screen applications and make recommendations for the position of a law school dean was held to be subject to the Sunshine Law. by screening applicants and deciding which applicants to reject from further consideration, the committee performed a policy-based decision-making function delegated to it by the president of the university. Disciplinary proceedings are subject to the Sunshine Law. For example, two members of a civil service board violated the Sunshine Law when they held a private discussion about a pending employment appeal during a recess of a board meeting. The following are examples of entities whose proceedings have been found to be subject to the Sunshine Law: a personnel council composed of citizens appointed by members of a county commission to hear appeals from county employees who have been disciplined; a grievance committee; a pre-termination conference panel. Regarding purchasing, in the absence of statutory exemption, meetings of public boards to discuss or take action on purchasing matters are subject to the Sunshine Law. Section 286.0113, (2), (b) Florida statutes establishes an exemption from the Sunshine Law for certain specified phases of a competitive solicitation process, provided that a complete recording is made of the exempt meeting. Due to the specific conditions which must be met before this exemption is used, it is recommended that a board seek approval from legal counsel before conducting an exempt meeting under this statute. While boards may adopt reasonable rules and policies to ensure orderly conduct of meetings, the Sunshine Law does not allow boards to ban non-disruptive videotaping, tape recording, or photography at public meetings. Similarly, the Sunshine Law requires that meetings of public boards or commissions be open to the public at all times. For meetings where a large turnout of the public is expected, the Attorney General's office has recommended that public boards and commissions take reasonable steps, such as moving the meeting to a larger room to accommodate the anticipated turnout. However, if the largest available public meeting room cannot accommodate all of those who are expected to attend, the use of video technology, i.e. a television screen outside the meeting room, may be appropriate. For example, a court found that even though not all members of the public were able to enter the meeting room, a board did not violate the Sunshine Law when it held a meeting at the board's usual meeting place and in the largest available room. The court noted that the board set up a computer with external speakers so that those who were not able to attend the meeting room could view and hear the proceedings. A violation of the Sunshine Law may occur if, during a recess of a public meeting, board members discuss issues before the board in a manner not generally audible to the public attending the meeting. Although such a meeting is not clandestine, one court has held that it would nevertheless violate the spirit and letter of the law. The term, quote, open to the public, unquote, as used in the Sunshine Law, means open to all persons who choose to attend. For example, Staff of a public agency clearly are members of the public as well as employees of the agency. They cannot, therefore, be excluded from public meetings. The Sunshine Law, however, does not preclude the application of ordinary personnel policies. For example, the requirement that annual leave be used to attend meetings, provided that such policies do not frustrate or subvert the purpose of the Sunshine Law. Effective October 1, 2013, Section 286.0114 Florida Statutes provides, subject to listed exceptions, that boards must allow an opportunity for the public to be heard before the board takes official action on a proposition. The statute does not prohibit boards from maintaining orderly conduct or proper decorum in a public meeting. Although most governmental boards historically provided an opportunity to be heard before taking action, this law was enacted by the 2013 legislature to require that boards allow public comment at most public meetings that are subject to the Sunshine Law. The opportunity to be heard does not have to occur at the same meeting at which the board or commission takes official action if the opportunity occurs at a meeting that is during the decision-making process and is within reasonable proximity in time before the meeting at which the board or commission takes official action. According to the statute, the right to be heard requirement does not apply to an official act that must be taken to deal with an emergency situation affecting the public health, welfare, or safety if compliance with the requirements would cause an unreasonable delay in the ability of the board or commission to act. An official act involving no more than a ministerial act, including but not limited to approval of minutes and ceremonial proclamations, a meeting that is exempt from the Sunshine Law, or a meeting during which the board or commission is acting in a quasi-judicial capacity. Section 286.0114 does not prohibit a board from maintaining orderly conduct or proper decorum in a public meeting. In addition, the opportunity to be heard is subject to rules or policies adopted by the board or commission. These rules or policies are limited to those that provide guidelines regarding the amount of time an individual has to address the board or commission, prescribe procedures for allowing representatives of groups or factions on a proposition to address the board or commission rather than all members of such groups or factions at meetings at which a large number of individuals wish to be heard, prescribe procedures or forms for an individual to use in order to inform the board or commission of a desire to be heard, to indicate his or her position on a proposition, and to indicate his or her designation of a representative to speak for him or her or the group on a proposition, or which designate a specific period of time for public comment. Here's a question designed to test some of the knowledge that has been presented so far. The question is, a board wants to close a meeting to protect privacy rights when it is discussing disciplinary issues. Which of the following options is available to the board? Close the meeting to the general public, but allow a reporter to be present, or prohibit videotaping and recording of the proceedings, or close the meeting based on the right of privacy in the Florida Constitution, or close the meeting only if the legislature has passed a law which exempts the meeting from the Sunshine Law. Take a few moments and think about which is the correct answer. The correct answer is D. Close the meeting only if the legislature has passed a law which exempts the meeting from the Sunshine Law. There are penalties associated with a violation of the Sunshine Law. There are civil actions which may be taken if an allegation is made in court that the Sunshine Law has been violated. The courts have found that action taken in violation of the Sunshine Law may be invalidated. There are criminal penalties, or it can result in suspension or removal from office. More specifically, the criminal penalties provide that a knowing violation of the Sunshine Law is a second-degree misdemeanor. A person convicted of a second-degree misdemeanor may be sentenced to a term of imprisonment not to exceed 60 days and or fined up to $500. Conduct which occurs outside the state and which constitutes a knowing violation of the Sunshine Law is a second-degree misdemeanor. Such violations are prosecuted in the county in which the board or commission normally conducts its official business. When a method or removal from office is not otherwise provided by the Constitution or by law, the governor may suspend an elected or appointed public officer who is indicted or informed against for any misdemeanor arising directly out of his or her official duties. If convicted, the officer may be removed from office by executive order of the governor. Section 286.011 (3)(a) Florida statutes imposes non-criminal penalties for violations of the Sunshine Law by providing that any public officer violating the provisions of the Sunshine Law is guilty of a non-criminal infraction punishable by a fine not exceeding $500. The state attorney may pursue such actions on behalf of the state. Reasonable attorney's fees will be assessed against a board or commission found to have violated the Sunshine Laws, and attorney's fees may be assessed against the individual members of the board, except in those cases where the board sought and took the advice of its attorney. The Sunshine Law also provides that no resolution, rule, regulation, or formal action shall be considered binding except as taken or made at an open meeting. Recognizing that the Sunshine Law should be construed so as to frustrate all evasive devices, the courts have held that action taken in violation of the law is void ab initio. For example, a contract for sale and purchase of real property was voided because the board failed to properly notice the meeting under the Sunshine Law. A violation of the Sunshine Law need not be clandestine in order for a contract to be invalidated, because the principle that a Sunshine Law violation renders void a resulting official action does not depend upon a finding of intent to violate the law or resulting prejudice. Where, however, a public board or commission does not merely perfunctorily ratify or ceremoniously accept at a later open meeting those decisions which were made at an earlier secret meeting, but rather takes, quote, independent final action in the sunshine, unquote, the decision of the board or commission will not be disturbed. Thus, in a case involving the validity of a lease approved by a board of county commissioners after an advisory committee held two unnoticed meetings regarding the lease, a court held that the Sunshine Law violations were cured when the Board of County Commissioners held open public hearings after the unnoticed meetings. An effort was made to make available to the public the minutes of the unnoticed meeting. The board approved a lease that was markedly different from that recommended by the advisory committee, and most of the lease negotiations were conducted after the advisory committee had concluded its work. It must be emphasized, though, that only a full open hearing will cure the defect. A violation of the Sunshine Law will not be cured by a perfunctory ratification of the action taken outside the sunshine. That concludes the discussion of Florida's Sunshine Law. The next discussion concerns Florida's Public Records Law. We're now moving to a discussion of Florida's Public Records Law. Florida's Public Records Act, Chapter 119, Florida Statutes, provides a right of access to records of state and local governments, as well as to private entities acting on their behalf. If material falls within the definition of public record, it must be disclosed to the public unless there is a statutory exemption. Article 1, Section 24, Florida Constitution, establishes a constitutional right of access to any public record made or received in connection with the official business of any public body officer or employee of the state, or persons acting on their behalf, except those records exempted by law pursuant to Article 1, Section 24 of the Florida Constitution, or specifically made confidential by the Constitution. The term public records means all documents, papers, letters, maps, books, tapes, photographs, films, sound recordings, data processing software, or other material, regardless of the physical form, characteristics, or means of transmission. This includes electronics communications like text messages and emails, made or received pursuant to law or ordinance, or in connection with the transaction of official business by any agency, including a private entity acting on behalf of a public agency, which are used to perpetuate, communicate, or formalize knowledge. The term public record is not limited to traditional written documents. As you can see, the definition includes tapes, photographs, films, sound recordings, data processing software, or other material, regardless of the physical form, characteristics, or means of transmission. As one court has stated, the physical format of the record is irrelevant. Electronic communications such as email are covered just like communications on paper. Clearly, as technology changes, the means by which agencies communicate, manage, and store information, public records will take on increasingly different forms. Yet the comprehensive scope of the term public records will continue to make the information open to inspection unless exempted by law. Let's take a closer look at the first part of the definition, that portion that makes all documents, papers, letters, maps, books, tapes, photographs, films, sound recordings, and data processing software or other material within the scope of the term public records. Because the Public Records Act includes electronic records as well as paper documents, tape recordings, and other more tangible materials, the courts have observed that the public records law includes documents that exist only in digital form. For example, information such as electronic calendars, databases, and word processing files stored in agency computers can all constitute public records because records made or received in the course of official business and intended to perpetuate, communicate, or formalize knowledge of some type fall within the definition of Chapter 119 Florida statutes. Accordingly, computerized public records are governed by the same rule as written documents and other public records. The records are subject to public inspection unless a statutory exemption exists, which removes the records from disclosure. For example, email messages made or received by agency employees in connection with official business are public records and subject to disclosure in the absence of an exemption. Such messages are subject to the statutory restrictions on destruction of public records. Therefore, emails sent by city commissioners in connection with the transaction of official business are public records subject to disclosure, even though the emails contain undisclosed or, quote, blind, unquote, recipients and their email addresses. Similarly, the Attorney General's office concluded that the placement of material on a city's Facebook page presumably would be in connection with the transaction of official business and thus subject to the public records law, and an agency would be required to follow the public records retention schedules adopted by the Department of State. The same conclusion applies to text messages and other electronic communications like tweets or instant messages made or received in the course of official business by a governmental agency or official. In a report issued in 2013, a state attorney concluded that text messages received by county commissioners concerning a controversial commission issue were, quote, public records and could only be lawfully disposed of pursuant to statute, unquote. Quote, the statutory procedures were not followed, and therefore all of the officials who deleted text messages related to this issue violated Florida law, unquote. The second part of the definition of public records refers to records made or received pursuant to law or ordinance or in connection with the transaction of official business. In order to constitute public records for purposes of public disclosure requirements, the records must have been prepared or received in connection with official business and be intended to perpetuate, communicate, or formalize knowledge of some type. Accordingly, records which are not made or received in connection with the transaction of official business do not constitute public records for purposes of Chapter 119 disclosure requirements. In evaluating whether a record is made or received in connection with the official business of an agency, the determining factor is the nature of the record, not its physical location. For example, if a public employee sends a proposed agency budget to his or her supervisor, the report is a public record regardless of whether the report was sent from the employee's work email account using a government computer or from his or her home computer using a personal email account. The same is true with text messages. A text message is a public record if it relates to official business, regardless of whether it is sent from a government-issued cell phone or from a personal cell phone. The third component of the definition of public record is that it be made or received by an agency, including a private entity acting on behalf of a public agency. Section 119.001, parentheses 2 of the Florida statutes defines the term agency to include any state, county, district, authority, or municipal officer, department, division, board, bureau, commission, or other separate unit of government created or established by law, including the Commission on Ethics, the Public Service Commission, and the Office of Public Counsel, and any other public or private agency, person, partnership, corporation, or business entity acting on behalf of any public agency. The legislature and the judiciary are not subject to the Public Records Act. However, Article 1, Section 24, Florida Constitution, establishes a constitutional right of access to any public record made or received in connection with the official business of any public body, officer, or employee of the state, or persons acting on their behalf, except those records exempted by law pursuant to Article 1, Section 24, Florida Constitution, or specifically made confidential by the Constitution. This right of access to public records applies to the legislative, executive, and judicial branches of government, counties, municipalities, and districts, and each constitutional officer, board, and commission, or entity created pursuant to law or by the Constitution. In addition, the Public Records Act may apply to a private entity if it is acting on behalf of a governmental agency in performing a public function. For example, if a county enters into a contract with a private corporation to operate the county jail, the records of the private corporation relating to this function become subject to the Public Records Act. In such cases, the private entity is, quote, standing in the shoes, unquote, of the government in performing a public function. The fourth component of the definition of public records is that the records are used to perpetuate, communicate, or formalize knowledge. There is no unfinished business exception to the public inspection copying requirements of Chapter 119 Florida statutes. If the purpose of a document prepared in connection with the official business of a public agency is to perpetuate, communicate, or formalize knowledge, then it is a public record regardless of whether it is in final form or the ultimate product of an agency. Accordingly, any agency document, however prepared, if circulated for review, comment, or information, is a public record regardless of whether it is an official expression of policy or marked preliminary or working draft or similar label. Examples of such materials would include preliminary drafts of agency rules or proposals which have been submitted for review to anyone within or outside the agency, and working drafts of reports which have been furnished to a supervisor for review or approval. In each of these cases, the fact that the records are part of a preliminary process does not detract from their essential character as public records. It follows, then, that such records are subject to disclosure unless the legislature has specifically exempted the documents from inspection or has otherwise expressly acted to make the records confidential. The next portion of the discussion deals with providing public records, and there are several principles that apply here. Section 119, 5.071A Florida statutes establishes a right of access to public records in plain and unequivocal terms. Quote, every person who has custody of a public record shall permit the record to be inspected and copied by any person desiring to do so at any reasonable time, under reasonable conditions, and under supervision by the custodian of the public records. Unquote. A custodian of public records may not impose a rule or condition of inspection which operates to restrict or circumvent a person's right of access. The Supreme Court has stated that the term reasonable conditions does not refer to conditions which must be fulfilled before review is permitted, but rather refers to reasonable regulations that would permit the custodian of records to protect them from alteration, damage, or destruction. It's clear that public records, therefore, cannot be withheld simply at the request of the sender. To allow the maker or sender of documents to dictate the circumstances under which the documents are deemed to be confidential would permit private parties, as opposed to the legislature, to determine which public records are subject to disclosure and which are not. Such a result would contravene the purpose and terms of Chapter 119 Florida statutes. A requester is not required to show a legitimate or non-commercial interest as a condition of access. Section 119.01 Florida statutes provides that it is the policy of this state that all state, county, municipal records shall be open for personal inspection and copying by any person, unquote. A former state citizenship requirement was deleted from the law in 1975. For example, a public employee is a person within the meaning of Chapter 119 Florida statutes and as such possesses the same right of inspection as any other person. The requester is not required to explain the purpose or reason for a public records request. As one court stated, the fact that a person seeking access to public records wishes to use them in a commercial enterprise does not alter his or her rights under Florida's public records law. The legislative objective underlying the creation of Chapter 119 was to ensure to the people of Florida the right to freely gain access to governmental records. The purpose for such inquiry is immaterial. Note, however, that Section 817.568 Florida statutes provides criminal penalties for unauthorized use of personal identification information for fraudulent or harassment purposes. Similarly, criminal use of public record or public records information is prohibited by Section 817.569 Florida statutes. A request cannot be denied because it is, quote, overbroad, unquote. In the absence of statutory exemption, A custodian must produce the records requested, regardless of the number of documents involved or possible inconvenience. Note, however, that pursuant to Section 119.074D Florida statutes, the custodian is authorized to charge, in addition to the cost of duplication, a reasonable service charge for the cost of the extensive use of information technology resources or of personnel if such extensive use is required because of the nature or volume of public records to be inspected or copied. Unless authorized by another statute, an agency may not require that public records requests be in writing or require the requester to identify himself or herself. Nothing in Chapter 119 Florida statutes requires that a requesting party make a demand for public records in person or in writing. A custodian must honor a request for copies of records, which is sufficient to identify the records desired, regardless of whether the request is in writing, over the telephone, or in person, provided that the required statutory fees are paid. In addition, a person requesting access to or copies of public records may not be required to disclose his or her name, address, telephone number, or the like to the custodian unless the custodian is required by law to obtain this information prior to releasing the records. If a public agency believes that it is necessary to provide written documentation of a request for public records, the agency may require that the custodian complete an appropriate form or document. However, the person requesting the records cannot be required to provide such documentation as a precondition to the granting of the request to inspect or copy public records. This question focuses on some of the information that has previously been provided. The question is, a county commissioner wants to send an email from his or her personal computer to the county manager about an item on the county commission meeting agenda. Which is correct? A. The email is not a public record because it was sent from the county commissioner's personal computer. Or B. The email is a public record, but the county manager should not respond because the response would violate the Sunshine Law. Or C. The email is a public record. The correct answer is C. Continuing on with providing public records, the Public Records Act does not contain a specific time limit such as 24 hours or 10 days. The Florida Supreme Court has stated that the only delay in producing public records that is permitted under the statute is the reasonable time allowed the custodian to retrieve the record and delete those portions of the record the custodian asserts are exempt. So generally, It is the volume of the records request that will influence the amount of time that the agency has to respond. An agency is not required to comply with a, quote, standing, unquote, request for records that do not now exist but may be created in the future. Similarly, an agency is not required to answer questions about the public records, other than providing information on how to obtain them, such as the cost. And an agency is not required to create a new record in response to a request for information. In other words, an agency is not required to reformat its existing records and provide them in a new particular form as demanded by the requester. Section 119.071A Florida Statutes states that the custodian of public records is to provide access to or copies of public records, quote, at any reasonable time, under reasonable conditions, and under supervision by the custodian of public records, unquote, provided that the required fees are paid. In other words, Chapter 119 Florida Statutes provides a right of access to inspect and copy an agency's existing public records. It does not require an agency to create new records in order to accommodate a request for information or require a custodian to give out information from the records of his or her office. For example, the Public Records Act does not require a town to produce an employee, such as the financial officer, to answer any questions regarding the financial records of the town. Similarly, a clerk of court is not required to provide an inmate with a list of documents from a case file which may be responsive to some forthcoming request. But if the agency maintains a record in more than one format, for example, the record exists both in electronic as format as well as in hard copy, the requester may choose which format he or she wants. Chapter 119 provides fees for access to and copies of public records. Providing public records is a statutory duty imposed by the legislature upon all record custodians and should not be considered a profit-making or revenue-generating operation. Thus, public information must be open for inspection without charge unless otherwise expressly provided by law. Section 119.07 parentheses 4 parentheses D Florida Statutes authorizes the imposition of a special service charge when the nature or volume of public records to be inspected is such as to require extensive use of information technology resources or extensive clerical or supervisory assistance or both. This charge must be reasonable and based on the labor or computer costs actually incurred by the agency. Thus, an agency may adopt a policy imposing a reasonable special service charge based on the actual labor cost for clerical personnel who are required, due to the nature or volume of a public records request, to safeguard such records from loss or destruction during their inspection. In doing so, however, the county's policy should reflect no more than the actual cost of the personnel's time and be sensitive to accommodating the request in such a way as to ensure unfettered access while safeguarding the records. Section 119.07 parentheses 4 provides that the custodian shall furnish a copy or a certified copy of a public record upon payment of the fee prescribed by law. Chapter 119 does not prohibit agencies from providing informational copies of public records without charge. If no fee is prescribed elsewhere in the statutes, Section 119.074A authorizes the custodian to charge a fee of up to 15 cents per one-sided copy for copies that are 14 inches by 8.5 inches or less. An agency may charge no more than an additional 5 cents for each two-sided duplicated copy. A charge of up to $1 per copy may be assessed for a certified copy of a public record. For all other copies, the charge is limited to the actual cost of duplication of the record. The phrase actual cost of duplication is defined to mean the cost of the material and supplies used to duplicate the record, but does not include labor cost or overhead cost associated with such duplication. An exception, however, exists for copies of county maps or aerial photographs supplied by county constitutional officers, which may include a reasonable charge for the labor and overhead associated with their duplication. An agency should not collect the sales tax when providing for copies of public records. With the exception of county maps or aerial photographs supplied by county constitutional officers, the Public Records Act does not authorize the addition of overhead costs such as office expenses to the charge for public records. Thus, an agency may not charge for travel time and retrieval costs for public records stored off-premises. Similarly, an agency may not charge fees designed to recoup the original cost of developing or producing records. For example, unless a specific request for copies requires extensive clerical or supervisory assistance or extensive use of information technology resources so as to trigger the special service charge authorized by Section 119.07 parentheses 4D, an agency may charge only the actual cost of duplication for copies of computerized public records. The imposition of a service charge, however, is dependent on the nature or volume of records requested, not on the cost to either develop or maintain the records or the database system. As stated previously, if the nature or volume of public records to be inspected or copied requires the extensive use of information technology resources or extensive clerical or supervisory assistance or both, the agency may charge a reasonable service charge based on the cost actually incurred by the agency for such extensive use of information technology resources or personnel. If authorized due to the nature or volume of a request, the special service charge should not be routinely imposed, but should reflect the information technology resources or labor costs actually incurred by the agency and must be reasonable. All public records must be retained in accordance with retention schedules approved by the Department of State. Even exempt records must be retained. Thus, for example, a municipality may not remove and destroy disciplinary notices with or without the employee's consent during the course of resolving collective bargaining grievances, except in accordance with the statutory restrictions on disposal of records. Similarly, the Attorney General's office concluded that the City of Hollywood could not destroy or dispose of licensure, certification, or employment examination questions and answer sheets except as authorized by statute. Additionally, the statutory prohibition against placing anonymous materials in the personnel file of a school district employee did not permit the destruction of such materials received in the course of official school business, absent compliance with statutory restrictions on destruction of records. Another question. A law enforcement agency receives a public records request for photographs obtained from a member of the public during the investigation of a robbery case that is now closed. There is no statutory exemption from the public records law that applies to the photographs. Which statement is correct? A. The agency may refuse to release the photographs because the public records law does not apply to photographs. Or B. Unless release of the photographs would violate accepted police standards and procedures, the agency must release them. Or C. Unless the person who took the photographs asked the agency not to release them, the agency must release them. Or D. The agency must release the photographs. The correct answer is D. A is incorrect because the public records law does include photographs. B is incorrect because the only reason that an agency may refuse to release a public record is if there is a statutory exemption. And in this case, there is no statutory exemption. And C is incorrect because unless the legislature has authorized the sender to request confidentiality, the wishes of the sender cannot dictate whether or not the agency releases the information. It's only whether there is a statutory exemption. So that is why the correct answer is D. There are penalties for noncompliance with the Public Records Act, just as there are for noncompliance with the Sunshine Law. Section 119.101A, Florida Statutes, provides that a violation of any provision of Chapter 119, Florida Statutes, by a public officer is a non-criminal infraction punishable by a fine not exceeding $500. Section 119.101B Florida Statutes states that a public officer who knowingly violates the provisions of Section 119.071 Florida Statutes is subject to suspension and removal or impeachment and is guilty of a misdemeanor of the first degree punishable by criminal penalties of 1 year in prison or a $1,000 fine or both. In addition to criminal penalties, there are civil penalties also included in the Act. A person who has been denied the right to inspect or copy public records law, public records under the Public Records Act may bring a civil action against the agency to enforce the terms of Chapter 119 Florida Statutes. Section 119.111 Florida Statutes mandates that actions brought under Chapter 119 are entitled to an immediate hearing and take priority over other pending cases. Section 119.12 Florida Statutes provides authority for an award of attorney's fees and reasonable costs in civil actions filed to enforce the provisions of the Public Records Act, provided that certain conditions are met. A successful pro se litigant may recover reasonable costs under this section. As amended in 2017, Section 119.12(1) Florida Statutes provides that if a civil action is filed against an agency to enforce the provisions of this chapter, the court shall assess and award the reasonable costs of enforcement, including reasonable attorney's fees, against the responsible agency, if the court determines that the agency unlawfully refused to permit a public record to be inspected or copied, and the complainant provided written notice of the public records request to the agency's custodian of public records at least 5 business days before filing the civil action. However, notice is not required if the agency fails to prominently post the contact information for the agency's custodian of public records in the agency's primary administrative building, in which public records are routinely created, sent, received, maintained, and requested, and on the agency's website, if the agency has a website. The court must also determine whether the complainant made the public records request or participated in the civil action for an improper purpose. Section 119.12(3) contains that requirement. If the court determines that there was an improper purpose, the court may not award attorney's fees or the costs of enforcement to the complainant, and shall assess and award against the complainant and to the agency reasonable costs, including reasonable attorney's fees incurred by the agency in responding to the civil action. The term improper purpose means a request to inspect or copy a public record or to participate in the civil action primarily to cause a violation of this chapter or for a frivolous purpose. Now that we've approached the end of the review, let's do some more questions to test knowledge on both the Sunshine Law and the Public Records Law. I will ask a series of multiple choice questions and then explain the correct answer. In each case, you will be looking at which of the following four answers is correct. Question number one. The Sunshine Law applies to A, the Leon County School Board, or B, the Federal Trade Commission, or C, the Florida House of Representatives, or D, all of the above. The correct answer is A, Leon County School Board. B, the Federal Trade Commission, is incorrect because the Sunshine Law does not apply to federal agencies. C, the Florida House of Representatives, is not correct because the statutory Sunshine Law does not apply to the legislature. However, there is a separate constitutional provision that governs meetings of the legislature. And therefore, D, all of the above, is incorrect. The next question is, if a city council believes that it is in the public interest, which of the following meetings may be closed to the public? A, meetings to discuss sensitive personnel issues involving accusations of sexual harassment against the city manager. B, meetings to discuss an ongoing investigation of a city department. Or C, a hearing on a complaint alleging that a city resident has violated the building code. Or D, none of the above. D, none of the above, is the correct answer, because the only basis to close a meeting is if the legislature has adopted a statutory exemption that applies to that particular meeting. The next question is, a city council member meets privately with another member of a city council to discuss a contract which is under consideration by the council. Which of the following is correct? A, the state attorney could charge the council members for violating the Sunshine Law, or B, the attorney general could charge the council members with a non-criminal infraction for violating the Sunshine Law, or C, the Florida Ethics Commission could charge the council members with violating the Sunshine Law, or D, all of the above. The correct answer is A, the state attorney could charge the council members with a violation of the Sunshine Law. B is not correct because the Attorney General does not have the authority to file criminal charges for a violation of the Sunshine Law. Similarly, C is not correct because the Florida Ethics Commission does not have jurisdiction. And therefore, D, all of the above, is also incorrect. The next question is, a husband and wife have both been elected to the city council. Which of the following statements is correct? A, both the husband and wife must resign from the city council or get a divorce. Or B, either the husband or wife has to resign because the Sunshine Law prohibits them from serving together on the council. Or C, both the husband and wife may serve on the council but must comply with the Sunshine Law when they discuss city council business. Or D, both the husband and wife may serve on the council but must file a conflict of interest form before each city council meeting. The correct answer is C. Both the husband and wife may serve on the council, but must comply with the Sunshine Law when they discuss city council business. A is incorrect because the Sunshine Law does not prohibit a husband and wife from being on the city council. It simply requires that all discussions between council members about public business must be open unless there is a statutory exemption. B is similarly incorrect because the Sunshine Law does not prohibit a husband and wife from serving together on the council. D is incorrect because a husband and wife would not be required to file a conflict of interest form before city council meetings unless there is a specific requirement that applies to that situation set forth in the Code of Ethics. The next question relates to the public records law. In this case, a city clerk has received over 150 public records requests over the past year from John Jones. Each of the public records requests asks for records relating to Mr. Jones' ex-wife, who is a city employee. Jones is very rude and obnoxious when he comes to City Hall to make his requests. Which of the following options is available to the clerk? A. Because Mr. Jones is so rude, the clerk would be authorized to ban him from City Hall and instead require him to make his requests in writing or over the telephone. Or B, because Mr. Jones has asked for an extraordinary number of records, the city clerk would be authorized to ask him to specify the particular records that he wants. Or C, because Mr. Jones has made numerous public records requests, which all relate to his ex-wife, Mr. Jones could be charged with stalking. Or D, none of the above. The correct answer is D. A is not correct because a person may make a public records request in writing or in person or over the telephone. B is incorrect because an agency is not authorized to require a person to specify the particular records that he wants. In other words, a public records request cannot be refused because the agency believes that it is overbroad. Similarly, a person is not precluded from making more than one public records request. So therefore, D is the correct answer. The next question also relates to the public records law. In this case, Walmart executives have contacted the city of Tallahassee and indicated that they might open up a store on the FSU campus. However, before the executives will talk to the city, they insist that the city enter into an agreement providing that if Walmart locates in Tallahassee, all city records pertaining to Walmart will not be kept at City Hall, but instead will be scanned and stored in a digital database maintained by Walmart and accessible only through use of a password. Which of the following four statements is correct? A. The city should not enter into the agreement unless it receives assurances from Walmart that they will provide the password to anyone who asks for it as long as the requester has a legitimate need for the records. Or B. The city should not enter into the agreement unless it receives assurances from Walmart that Walmart will also maintain hard copies of the digital records. C. The city should not enter into the agreement unless it receives assurances that FSU will also be allowed access to the Walmart records. Or D. The city should not enter into the agreement. The correct answer is D. Alternatives A, B, and C all conflict with the requirements of the public records law. So D is the correct answer. The city should not enter into the agreement. The final public records question is this. An employee is working on an investigative report. The investigation has been going on for several weeks, and the employee has prepared a number of drafts of the report. A public records request is filed with the agency seeking all records relating to the investigation. Which of the following constitutes a public record which must be released unless there is a statutory exemption? A. An early draft that never left the employee's desk and was never circulated to anyone within or outside the agency, or B, a draft report that was sent to the employee's supervisor and returned with a note, quote, need to make changes, unquote, or C, a draft report that was emailed to the supervisor, but the supervisor has not gotten around to reading it yet, or D, B, and C. The correct answer is D, B, and C, because these answers recognize that a public record includes material that is prepared to perpetuate, communicate, or formalize knowledge, and B, a draft report that was sent to the employee supervisor and was returned with a note was communicated. And C, similarly, a draft report that was emailed to the supervisor has also been communicated to that supervisor regardless of whether or not the supervisor has read it. So that is why B and C recognize that material that has been prepared to perpetuate, communicate, or formalize knowledge can be a public record subject to disclosure in the absence of a statutory exemption. That concludes the review questions portion of the seminar. Finally, there are a number of additional resources that are available to learn more about Florida's open government laws. The Office of Attorney General Pam Bondi website, www.myfloridalegal.com, contains a wealth of information that you can use to learn more. An online edition of the Sunshine Manual is located there, as well as circuit court and county court cases cited in the Sunshine Manual. We have training resources that are available there. In addition, you can also access the Attorney General's opinions that are cited in the Attorney General's Sunshine Manual. These are accessible through the AG Opinion database, which is also searchable. In addition, Governor Rick Scott website, www.flgov.com, contains helpful open government information, including a contact list which the public can use to determine open government contacts in each of the state agencies. In addition, the First Amendment Foundation website, www.floridafaf.org, contains a wealth of information that is extremely helpful, including sample forms which members of the public can use to make public records requests, as well as other helpful information on how to make a public records request. There's also information there regarding numerous resources that the First Amendment Foundation has available to assist both agencies and the public in learning more about our open government laws. I hope this training seminar has been helpful and has answered many of the questions that you have about Florida's Sunshine and Public Records Law. If you would like more information, please feel free to contact me directly at pat.gleason, G-L-E-A-S-O-N, at myfloridalegal.com. I can also be reached at 850-245-0140 if you have any questions about open government that I can answer. Thank you again for your attention.